So it doesn't really matter what gender you are, you compete together.
From Wyoming Public Media, this is The Modern West. I'm Micah Schweitzer. March is Women's History Month, so this time we're shining a light on female athletes making a mark in their sports. Coming up, we'll hear from the women who swept the podium at the biggest dog sled race in the lower 48, and we'll start the show with another chilly sport, ice climbing. Last winter celebrated the 20th Cody Ice Climbing Festival. It features nightly speakers and ice clinics. Angela Van Wemerch is a professional ice climber. She's been climbing for more than 5 years, and as a woman, she teaches many all-women classes. Wyoming Public Radio's Camila Kudelska spoke with Van Wemerch about how she got introduced to ice climbing and how the sport is becoming more attractive to women.
I was leaving California, and I was hitchhiking out a Truckee, and I got picked up by somebody who does his summers rock climbing guiding and does his winters in the mountains in Colorado. He told me about a town called Ouray, Colorado, and it's like an epicenter for ice climbing. And I had seen it in National Geographic, and it seemed like something I wanted to try. So I bought a bag full of used gear and hitchhiked over to Colorado, and I didn't have any experience rock climbing, but everybody there climbs, and I was really keen. So I made it known that I was new to town. I was looking for climbing partners, and I was really excited to get out there. And nobody would climb with me because I was a newbie. And somebody saw me doing it a couple days in a row, and they were like, "What are you doing? Like, do you want to get on a rope with us?" And I was super excited, and I said yes, of course, and I ended up climbing with this group of people for a couple days.
What is so fascinating about ice climbing? Like, why did you not give up?
It's always changing, and it's always forcing me to manipulate, like, my body to work with it. It's not something that, like, you walk up to and you decide, like, oh, I'm going to climb this. This is what I'm going to do. It's actually, like, you have to read the ice. If ice is brittle, you have to tap. And if the ice is sticky, you can swing hard. And, you know, if it's bulbous, you have to kind of swing around that. And I love that it kept me fully engaged. And when I was climbing, I couldn't really think about anything else. I was in deep focus.
How would you describe ice climbing to someone who's never done it before?
It is abstract and yet entirely visceral, you know, like you feel the swings and they reverberate into your arm and they kind of like get into your chest, and it's inspiring and wild and it's delicate and fickle. I mean, it really embodies such a wide spectrum of characteristics, but I think that's why I like it so much.
And what's the most challenging thing?
I think managing fear and being rational with it is probably one of the biggest challenges for me, because there's an accepted risk when you go out climbing. You're not allowed to fall when you ice climb. And so constantly having that in your brain, like, if it's not an option, it's a good thing. It keeps you safe. But it also can be like, oh my gosh, but like, I'm tired, or this is steep. I haven't fallen, knock on wood. I hate even saying it. When I say it out loud, it makes me just cringe.
What were you doing at the Cody Ice Fest?
So I've been teaching clinics at Ice Fest for a handful of years now, and Cody Ice Fest, I was there teaching, and I was just there to get people excited about ice climbing. I had a couple classes, but I had one that was really cool. It was all female class, and I like loved it.
You've trained a lot of women. Are there a lot of women ice climbers out there?
You know, there's not a huge number of people doing it at like a higher level, but I see that changing, and I've seen the perspective on ice climbing change dramatically, and it's actually interests so many women. Like at the Cody Ice Festival, we actually had more women there than men.
Yeah, so do you make a point to teach women when you're doing training classes?
You know, it's funny, I usually get signed up for them because I'm the only chick, but as it's happened, I've learned that those classes give me the most back. I come back so psyched after my female classes, because all those women are like me. Like, there's, you know, I was out there, I wanted to do it, I didn't know how to get into it, and I just like went to Ouray by myself, surrounded by men, and I was like, please, somebody teach me. And all the women in my class were just like that. They had been hiking on their own and doing backpacking trips. They all have this adventurous mentality, and they haven't had people to do it with. So teaching a group full of women that were all psyched. I was like, hey, girls, exchange phone numbers. These are your chicks. It was really encouraging. It was just super cool. And that happens like all the time when women get together.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
The Pedigree Stage Stop Race in Jackson, Wyoming is the biggest dog sled race in the lower 48 states. This year, for the first time ever, women took the event's top three spots. Wyoming Public Radio's Caroline Ballard caught up with Annie Mallow, Emily Entrekin, and Alex Crittenden, the first, second, and third place winners, respectively, while they were on the road to their next race.
Taking first place in the 2019 race is Annie Mallow, who I caught in a rare patch of cell phone service somewhere in the long stretch between Jackson and the Paw, Manitoba, where she's heading to her next race.
So I'm Annie Mallow from Quebec, Canada. Well, I rushed from 95, so it's a very long time ago when I raced right away with my husband. And we're traveling all the family, so that's a family affair.
Mallow was thrilled to be part of the all-female finish.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're really proud of that, I think. We have a kind of an advantage to be a woman in that race because of the elevation and, the mountains and all that. So usually we're a little bit less heavier than the men. So that's why I think we can perform a little bit more.
Taking second place is Emily Entrekin. I caught her on a rare day off.
My name is Emily Entrekin. I'm from Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm skiing at Big Sky, which is awesome. I'm taking a day off from dogs and having some fun.
Originally, Entrekin wasn't even on the roster for the Stage Stop race.
When I was planning for this race, I was on the wait list for quite a while, but I was still training for it. And I finally got the call that I was in at the end of December. And so I started looking at the roster more, and the more I looked at it, I was like, oh, geez, like the competition is so stellar and great that it was going to be difficult really to get top 10. And I thought if I got top 5, that would be like if everything went perfect and I had a really good luck. And so second place is really a huge accomplishment and definitely not what I was expecting. Alex and Annie Mallow are like really great competitors and really awesome mushers. And I mean, mostly it just was when I was standing up on the podium with them, like looking around, like, whoa, like my team is competing with these two. So it was really nice to share the podium with them.
Entrekin is also on her way up to Manitoba to compete in the same race as Mallow. And she's betting another person in particular will be feeling the competition. Alex Crittenden, the third place winner, who just missed Entrekin's time at the Stage Stop race by 11 seconds.
On this race, since it was 8 days and long mile, 11 seconds is definitely very close. Obviously, the team and I ran really well, but I think we had a little extra luck than Alex. And I'm pretty sure Alex is definitely thinking about that every night into the next race. I'm sure she's going to give it her all to make sure she beats me.
My name is Alex Crittenden, and I'm from Bonneret, Wyoming. Oh my gosh, yeah, 11 seconds. That was tough. I was really, really hoping that I could make up that time on her on the last leg of the race, and we gave it our all and gave it a really good push, but it just didn't come together. So, but 11 seconds, man, that's pretty much a tie, right? I have had better finishes in other races, but there's no race that compares to this race. Like, the toughness of it and the level of competition is just world class. So there's really nothing that you can compare it to.
The fact that three women placed in the top three spots demonstrates what Crittenden says is one of the great things about the sport.
That's kind of the beauty of dog mushing, is that everybody's equal. You know, I mean, not every team is equal, but each dog driver has their own strengths and weaknesses, and so it doesn't really matter what gender you are. You all compete together. So and it's kind of the same with the dogs. People always ask me, they're like,
oh, is it mostly females? Is it mostly males? And it's like, you know, it's just like people, it depends on the dog. It doesn't depend on the gender for how much drive and effort they're willing to put in. So, but definitely something really cool to be a part of. I am currently in Bozeman, Montana. Sort of lost. I thought I was on the right route and now I'm not. But we're headed for DePaul, Manitoba for a race up there.
With Malo, Entrekin, and many of the same teams from the Stage Stop race all heading up to the Trappers Festival in Manitoba, Crittenden is looking forward to a rematch.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. It'll be a really fun race. This is actually my rookie year in this race, and I think she's ran it before, and Annie has as well. And they both, like I said, are amazing dog drivers, and this race will be something new for me. It's going to be quite a bit faster than what I'm used to. So a little bit out of my comfort zone, but I think we'll hang tough. We'll see what happens.
For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Caroline Ballard.
Last year, Jackson Hole Mountain Resort launched a new extreme skiing and snowboarding competition. 18 men and 7 women competed to be crowned the King and Queen of Corbetts. At the awards ceremony, the top male won $5,000 more than the top female finisher. Photos of the winners with their checks received criticism on social media, but the resort quickly pulled together funds to fill the gap. Wyoming Public Radio's Tennessee Watson reports that there's nothing in big mountain skiing that guarantees equal prizes.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
At the count of one, Kate Zeliff soared off a snowy cliff. She pulled a shifty, kicking the tails of her skis to the left and straightening them again as she dropped what looks like 20 feet into Corbett's Couloir. Flanked by rock walls on either side, she stuck the landing, took some graceful turns, and launched off a jump into a spread eagle before cruising across the finish line. For that stellar run, Zeliff was crowned Queen of Corbett's Couloir and handed a check.
I was so blown away by what that meant for my skiing and what that meant for me and potentially my career and all these other things that I didn't even look at what my check said.
But other people noticed that her check said $3,000, while the King of Corbetts held a check for $8,000. An Instagram post with images of the checks called out Jackson Hole for perpetuating the gender wage gap. Zeliff says by the next day, Jackson Hole had fixed the disparity, but that wasn't the end of the discussion.
What was interesting was the next day when I was getting phone calls and texts and emails like, aren't you pissed? I was like, whoa, I didn't even think about it, to be honest with you.
As a 24-year-old skier just entering her pro career, she was excited to be winning any money at all. But she admits paying attention to these issues is what leads to change. Tom Winter agrees.
It's good to see people having these conversations because obviously awareness that things could be done better, that awareness, once you have it, starts helping you look for solutions.
Winter is the Americas manager for the Free Ride World Tour. At the annual series of competitions, the best free skiers in the world vie for the world champion title. But to get on the world tour, a skier must qualify. And Winter says at the qualifying competitions, the prizes aren't always equal.
Usually when you have events that are fueled with entry fees, that impacts prize purse funds on offer for athletes.
In other words, the more athletes in a given category, the more money they're competing to win. Winter says that puts women at a disadvantage because fewer of them compete.
We need to start asking questions of event organizers about parity and about participation.
Winter says the International Free Skiers and Snowboarders Association sets guidelines for competitions, but resorts aren't required to provide equal prizes. But if they did, Winter says, it would entice more women to pursue competitive big mountain free skiing. He points out women can't be expected to achieve the same degree of athleticism or take the same risks as men if they don't have access to the same resources. And there are resorts who've figured out how to make sure they do. Grand Targhee in Wyoming is one of them. So is Crystal Mountain in Washington State, where Brianna Stoutenberg is the events coordinator.
You know, the men and the women, they're skiing the same terrain. So that's really important to me as an event coordinator, that we do provide the same payout to the men and the women.
I asked Stoutenberg about Tom Winter's point that when fewer women compete, there's less prize money to go around. She overcomes that by pulling the entry fees from the men and the women together. Then she divides accordingly to provide cash prizes to the top female and male finishers. Men might get less with this equation, but Stoutenberg hasn't heard complaints.
It seems to have worked for our resort and our athletes for the past 5 years or so.
I also reached out to Crested Butte Mountain Resort and Taos Ski Valley, but I couldn't get a clear answer on how they handled prizes at the free skiing qualifiers they host. Winter says consumers can help promote good practices by supporting the resorts and event sponsors who do the right thing.
I think that consumers should be activists. I think they should be engaged. That's how change happens.
Kate Zeliff, the 2018 Queen of Corbett's, says change is happening fast. She just competed in a free ride World Tour qualifier at Revelstoke in British Columbia. She texted me to tell me how it went. The message said, "Got third place and the prize money is equal!" Exclamation point. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Tennessee Watson.
Anna Marno was born and raised in the tiny town of Centennial, Wyoming, population 270. She spent much of her childhood at the Snowy Range ski area in the mountains above town, and Anna quickly became a talented skier. She qualified for the U.S. ski team her senior year of high school. Before she retired from the team in 2017, she sat down with Wyoming Public Radio to share her story.
As soon as I could walk, and my brother as well, we were walking around either on our carpet or out in our backyard on little skis that you could literally strap onto your snow boots. I started skiing just for fun with my family. I guess I always just grew up around gates and racing and had my dad as my coach, and my brother was, you know, did everything he did, or tried to at least. And then we started traveling to races when I was 8, more just for fun. And then my brother and I actually ended up doing really well, so we kept doing it. And a few years later, we ended up moving to Steamboat Springs for basically middle school and high school. Bigger schools, bigger mountain, big ski program. I spend the summers in Park City, Utah, and take classes at Westminster College in Salt Lake, and then mostly just doing physical training because that's where the U.S. ski team is based. And then during the winter, I'm anywhere from Chile to Europe to Canada to Maine, California. It's kind of been an adventure. I've been hurt a lot in the last few years, too. So it's both instilled my love for it and also kind of shown me the hardest parts of it. In 2011, I tore my ACL, MCL, meniscus, and I think that's it, and had surgery and had to take almost a full year off of skiing. I obviously wanted to have the best, fastest recovery that anyone had ever had. And then it ended up taking a couple more months. And that's kind of been a theme throughout all of my injuries as well. But I managed to come back stronger and better, and took a couple months longer, I think, than I wanted, which was hard. And then last January, I did the same thing to my same knee again when I was in Austria and had to fly home, have surgery. And that was a tough one because I was having a really promising season and I was going into an Olympic year. And so I missed the rest of the season and then came back this year. My season kind of came down to the last couple weeks, which was kind of scary. So now I had a really good end of the season and re-qualified for the U.S. team. And we always kind of joke on our team that ski racing makes you grow up really fast until you're about 18 or 20, and then we all just kind of plateau. Our maturity doesn't really change too much since then. So in a lot of ways, I think that we've had to grow up a little faster, and being hurt and having to go through some of those experiences earlier than most people do makes you see the world a little bit differently.
That's former U.S. skier Anna Marno. Adrian Shirk and Cordelia Zars produced the piece. And that's it for this episode of The Modern West. We've increased our production schedule, so we'll have a new episode for you in a couple of weeks. If you like what you're hearing, you can help other people find the show by leaving a rating or review wherever you're listening. David Graff produced this episode. Anna Rader is our web editor. The theme music is by Jeff Troxell, and I'm Micah Schweitzer. The Modern West is a production of Wyoming Public Media.